Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm GMB Kamichuk, a working writer and illustrator. Don't let all those fancy initials fool you. The first letter stands for Gregory. I am here without my long-suffering co-host.
Yeah, where is he?
He is on a mountain somewhere. Like all good gurus, he has retreated.
Metaphorical mountain.
On a real mountain. He's on a real mountain skiing, I think. Justin, we miss you. So Chasing Artwork Known the World Over as Justin Curry is not here today. He is on a vacation. I have brought instead two ne'er-do-wells from our studio environment, Lyndon Redchenka and Dr. Jonathan Ball. And today we are going to talk to you about a topic that has been on a lot of our minds recently, which is the intangible benefits of publishing your book with a traditional publisher. Now, if you're a longtime Super Pulp Science listener, you know that we tend to push really hard on the do-it-yourself model, the cut everyone out of the middle, the control your means of production. I'm still for all of those things. But we do a hybrid model. Anyone who's listened to more than 10 episodes of our show know that we take all of those strengths, and then we take all of the strengths of traditional publishing when we can get it. And I realized upon reflection that we have not really talked about the benefits of traditional publishing. I'm traditionally published by a number of publishers, Renegade Arts Entertainment, Portage and Main Press, Great Plains Publications, Z2, Insight Editions, Printed in Blood. These are all traditional publishers, and I like working with all of them. So important to say that for every book that we have out traditionally, we have two or three out non-traditionally, and I think that that's a good ratio. Gentlemen, give your publishing bona fides. Tell our dear listeners what books you've had out with traditional publishers so that if they're playing the Google search it game, they can look for what we're talking about.
Almost all my books are out with traditional publishers. So I've done a few self-publishing projects. Like I've published some comics, but most of my comics are out with Heavy Metal. I've published a couple, books. I mean, you could say it's self-published. I'm a publisher, but I'm publishing other people sometimes, right? But when I publish my own stuff, that's just considered self-published. So I've done a couple of books that way, but for the most part, my books are out with other publishers. So I've done three books with Coach House Books. I've done two books with Book Hug Press. I've done a book with the University of Toronto Press. I did a book with Insomniac Press. And I'm sure there's other publishers I'm just forgetting at the moment. My apologies to them, but most of my books are out with other people.
Yeah. Hilarious question. My first two books, Infinite Universe and What Will Not Last, were traditionally first self-published, then picked up to be republished traditionally by a small publisher called Mythos and Ink Press that subsequently ceased to be a publisher.
R.I.P.
And then I sold a comic series, There Was Another Life, to a small comics publisher, and it solicited in Diamond, and then that publisher also ceased. Well, I don't know if they ceased to exist, but they pulled all of their books and gave me my rights back. So that book was then canceled also. And now Hero Man is with At Bay Press. You can pick it up next month and change from all your favorite local booksellers.
So hold on, just to be clear, it seems that any association with you whatsoever leads that company into insolvency? Is that what I'm...
I mean, I'm not going to say no.
Okay.
Track record has indicated as such.
At Bay Press is currently publishing, I think, 15 Canadian titles.
Good luck, At Bay Press.
Yeah. And
Zach Schuster and I are coming for you.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Destroyer of publishers.
But it's a nice mix. So you're somebody like you who's mostly... quote-unquote self-published but done some traditional publishing, me who's mostly traditionally published but done some self-publishing, and Lennon who's kind of in the weird middle position where he's had the same project both traditionally and self-published.
Well, I'm trying to get self-published and all the publishers keep failing me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for the dear listener.
But in some ways, I would say, Lennon, you're trying to decide on a certain level where to go, right? You're kind of in that middle position.
I'm just going through whatever doors are open.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to get, is that decision, I think, is on a lot of people's minds. Let's first set the conditions of our discussion. Let's imagine that you have a finished book. We won't talk about all the hardships, pains, and sufferings that went to getting that finished book made, right? There are a lot of intangible qualities that come with...
You mean written?
Making the manuscript, right? And we could get those out of the way maybe right off the jump. There are intangible qualities that are not related to how you're going to get paid to have a writing practice, to have the internal capacity to calm your mind and get some of those ideas out on paper. I think it's healthy. Even if your manuscript is never published, someone who writes every day, I think ultimately will be better off than someone who doesn't. So that's just my own soapbox creaking there under me.
But it's a good question. Like, if you've got a manuscript,
now what? You have a manuscript. And I think a lot of people ask themselves what to do next. And I think one of the first hurdles is it any good?
I was going to say, yeah. Right? I think one of the first things is, well, a lot of the books that are there are not...
So this
at the level that they could be published. Though, yeah, like, are we assuming that it's good enough to be published?
We're really talking about the decision.
Okay.
Let's assume that you're not sure.
Okay.
And this is one of the intangible benefits, I think, of submitting your work to traditional publishers. The gates that are in place to see if your book can make it from the slush pile into an editor's hands. Just hold on, wait before. Are really good for a first-time writer to navigate. To submit often, to receive rejections, to receive the feedback from editorial. Sometimes there's none. It's just, no, we don't want it. Sometimes it's, hey, it was close. Sometimes it's, you made it close to our managing editor, but then, you know, we had our meeting and our slate's full. Resubmit next year. All of those things, which, by the way, take a long time. It can take a year for you to hear all that and get all that information back. I think are good for a beginning writer. I don't think you should be sitting on your laurels once you've submitted that manuscript. I think you should immediately start your next manuscript. That's my advice to you as a writer, because it's much easier to take criticism about something you have put over there while you're working on something else than it is to have all of your psychic focus on, you know, that pressure doesn't make a diamond, actually. It just causes you to crack apart.
You can't expect to compete with that. Every day we get weaker while they get stronger. It's finished.
I'm just struggling to understand your premise, because I agree with everything you said is 100% true and accurate. But I don't understand the idea that you could have a manuscript written and not know if it's any good.
That's for another discussion. That's a whole other podcast topic. We'll talk about how to evaluate whether you think your work is good or not.
Okay, so we're assuming it's good?
We're assuming that you're confident enough in it that you want to try sending it out.
Got it.
Okay? So it may not be good, but you're still trying to decide.
Okay.
And let's face it,
I know I'm on board.
We've all done books that we were confident enough that we sent out, and then it turned out they weren't any good, and we had to do more work.
I still consider myself one of those people. I consider myself what's called a 95%er, which you're almost that good enough to be in a major or a mainstream publisher, but a lot of the mainstream stuff is not quite there. And when we talk about publishers, we have to sort of recognize the scope of how different some publishers are, you know, where there's the Booms, Images, it was in comics publishing, the Booms and the Images and the IDWs, where they have a very specific mainstream comics niche that has a very specific feeling to it, and they only want very narrow types of books. And then there are literary comics publishers, like ones that Gregory and I are used to working with, that... don't want to operate in that westernized mainstream space, and they want more of an international presence, and therefore their books look different.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that no one has a better book; they just have different books.
Yeah.
And so, as a creative,
as
you need to.
As we were talking about last night in a meeting, some books have more laser fighting, and some have less laser fighting.
But what? I like what you're getting at is there are different types of publishers even within traditional publishing, which I don't think people always understand. They often think, oh, the old publishers are published, traditional publishers are traditional publishers, you know. And so you're getting into the market research on a certain level. Like, one of the things you need to do to make this decision, I would argue, is do your own market research. Mm-hmm. And get a real sense of what are the options out there before you can settle on your option.
And I'll say two things. Number one, you identified yourself as a 95% or almost there. As a person who's watched you navigate this element of your career, the reason you think that about yourself, the reason you know that about yourself, is by attempting to publish.
Great. Yep.
Right? You have received feedback by seeking mentors who are beyond you in their publishing journey. You have received important feedback. You've listened to that feedback, and you have decided that, oh, I'm so close, and if I just add that last 5%, I could get somewhere.
Yep.
You got that by trying to go the traditional publishing route. This is one of those intangible benefits of attempting to be published traditionally. It teaches you about your own writing process. I also think, related to what Jonathan was saying about knowing whether your manuscript is good or bad, that's largely not up to you. Knowing whether or not, because the audience decides, right?
Well, the editor decides.
And also, whether a book is quote unquote good or bad can have little bearing on whether or not it sells well.
Yeah.
Right? So marketability is a whole other thing. And a good way to learn how that works for you is to give it a shot and see what people are saying. But another thing Jonathan was saying is do this market research. And if you're new to publishing, this is sounds like a very daunting task, but I'll give you the simplest method for market research that I know. Go into a bookstore, buy three books that you like based only on your own interest, then go home and look up the publishers.
Yeah.
See the other lists that are on there. And that will give you some market research.
Yep.
You'll know what they're publishing and who their target market is because, dear listener, it was you.
Even more simply than that, you could just look at the book is on your shelf. Like, what books have you been reading that you think are like your work? You know, if you were imagining yourself on a bookshelf, a magical bookshelf of someone else, you know, again, what else is on that bookshelf? People like you. And then you go look up, as you say. So you probably own a bunch of those books already because you're probably fans of those people. And you can look up the publishers. You can look up you can look in the back and see what agent they're thanking.
Here's why I suggest go to a current open bookstore, like one that has doors, not an online
While they can remain open.
Right. No. Because that's what's current.
Yeah.
My shelf has books that go back, you know, 150 years and also have stuff that came out last month because I'm a bit of a Wednesday warrior. So those things, right, create a skew if you look at my shelf because it's just what I like. Whereas if you go into a bookstore and you see what catches your eye right now, it means that's what those publishers invested in last year and that's a little bit more current. And then, again, you're holding that book. You come to the cashier. Here's some more market research. You can ask them, how's this book doing? They will actually tell you, oh, man, that's selling like crazy. Or, oh, no, we only brought in three copies. We only ever bring in three copies of that publisher because it's a real niche thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can get that information just by being a customer that is not afraid to ask a question or two while you're at point of sale.
Just to move a little closer to the thing you really want to get at, I think it's worth discussing one of the reasons people do publish traditionally. I find, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but when I see people discussing like publishers and why they're traditionally publishing or trying to seek a traditional publishing contract, trying to get an agent, all these things, they're almost exclusively focused on the size of the advance. And that is sort of one of the big ideas in terms of traditional publishing. People have this idea that, well, that's how you get a large advance is by going to a traditional publisher, which is true. That is where you can find a large advance.
And just
I would say it's the worst reason to ever go to a traditional publisher.
So I'm going
to
play dictionary for the dear listener. Advance is your advance against earnings that a publisher looks at your manuscript. They look at the marketplace. They do a calculation and they say, oh, I think over the lifetime of this book, it might earn $100,000, at which point we're going to offer you X for that book. And that X fluctuates wildly based on you. You're the X in this instance, right? You could cue the Spock song from the musical episode, right? You're trying to solve for X here. The incomparable here is that...
Intangible?
No, this is incomparable. If you compare me to Lyndon, right? that's just two authors, two different authors. If it was a Fortnite game, right, it's just two skins. One of them looks like Lyndon, one of them looks like Gregory. In terms of how the game is played, you don't know until you start. And so if you, however, have a profile, if you're famous somewhere else, they'll often increase the advance even though they don't know whether or not the book will sell.
But if you're not famous...
This is where we are.
So obviously if you're famous, you should go... you got options that other people don't have.
That's yeah, right. You should kickstart your book.
Like us, we're not famous.
Well, I don't want to get into advice for famous people, but like...
Like if you're Brandon Sanderson, just make your own book.
That's our next podcast, advice for famous
people. Because it's a deal... A lot of it doesn't apply, right? But when I see people talking about, like, should I go traditional or should I go self-publishing, they're often focused on money. Traditional publishing is where the money is, they think. Now, it's not true necessarily, but it is true in terms of advances. You will not get an advance if you self-publish because there is no one to give you the advance. Yeah. If you publish traditionally with a smaller publisher, you're unlikely to get a sizable advance. You know, the largest advance I've ever gotten is $1,000, which is large for... the publishers that I tend to deal with. That's a large, considered a large advance, you know, amongst those publishers. It's a decent small advance. They would give out larger ones for other people easily, I'm sure. But they're not going to get up to the realm of six figures, right? Never mind a six-figure advance. You have to really be in the traditional publishing realm. You probably have an agent who works with large publishers and so on and so forth. People will fixate on that, I find, as a reason or the reason to be traditionally published. I think it is probably the worst reason to be traditionally published.
And let me tell you why that's true. The book market changed in a significant way. There was a time when big publishers developed an author. They allowed them to have a few books to help find who it was their demographic was. And then once they targeted that demographic with three or four novels, then they would double down and really push a big... This was the time when there was a bookstore in every airport. There was a bookstore in every mall. There was a bookstore in every neighborhood. Those times are over. So publishers aren't doing that. So if you're already famous somewhere else, your advance is going to be high. And if you aren't, it's going to be low.
Greetings from the Humongous. The Lord Humongous. The warrior of the wasteland. The Ayatollah of rock and roller.
So I'd like to talk about what I think about when I'm trying to decide whether to self-publish a book versus take it to a publisher. And there are two factors to that only. Money and audience. Because as we know, right, traditional publishing is not the path you take if you want to make money at our scale.
Yeah,
because your royalties will be so small, the advance will be non-existent, and what a traditional publisher will provide you is potentially an audience that you're not currently reaching with what you're doing right now, which is that we self-publish our books, we take a huge cut of money on them every time we sell one, far more than any publisher is ever going to give us. But we travel to shows and we post online, and that's how we grow our audience. But we're not necessarily getting into bookstores the same way that a traditional publisher can get us into bookstores, into international book festivals, to international bookstores, translation rights. And so when I'm looking at a publisher, and now I'm thinking specifically in the comic space because that's where I work primarily right now, there are very few comics publishers, realistically, that can do a better job of marketing my book than I can. And now, when I say few, I'm talking, I can count them on my fingers. You know, it's right. Your Image, your Boom, your IDW, your, you know.
So Impress is part Marvel of this.
Yeah. And, you know, the smaller comics publishers that have a online presence that you know, will send you a contract that you can barely comprehend because they have no idea what it says themselves, they're not going to do a better job of marketing your book than you are. And so why, when you balance that, why would you pick a small publisher just for the argument
of
being published?
Here's the meat of our conversation. Here is why you would. And that's what I want to talk
about. Yeah.
The intangible things that come along with.
And there are some great ones.
Right. Setting your expectations rationally and reasonably to say, I am with a mid-range publisher They gave me a $500 or a $1,000 advance, and that's an advance against earnings. And the reason the advance is so small is they don't think they're going to sell enough books. Now, we're Canadians, so it's a smaller book market here, too. They don't think they're going to sell enough books. So if I'm only going to make $1,000 and then maybe $1,000 a year on my book in royalties.
$1,000 if you're lucky.
Yeah.
A year.
What is the point? Well,
yeah.
I'll tell you some of those points. I think there are a number of intangibles that come with having your book traditionally published. Right off the top, here's one of them. It's kind of like, dear listener, when you were in high school, perhaps, and you were in your first real relationship. Suddenly, before you were in that first real relationship, you didn't know how anything worked. You didn't know where things were going to go. You didn't know how to manage your feelings. It was just all crazy. And then it happens. And suddenly, you're dateable.
Yeah.
And everyone around you starts looking at you differently because they didn't have to make you dateable. Now you are dateable.
Is it like wearing a wedding ring, Gregory?
It's like wearing a wedding ring, right? In that people recognize right at first glance, when they see your book at the bookstore, that you got your stuff in on time, that you handled an editorial mandate, that you worked properly with an editor, that maybe a substantive editor gave you ideas that weren't yours to incorporate into your book in order to make it more marketable or less abrasive to the market. It's sometimes a better way to think about it. So right there, you're now went from not publishable to publishable.
Yeah, it's an endorsement by someone else.
And you're talking about other publishers are seeing you as
this
a possible person
about, right?
They could work with.
That's right.
But there's also the street
cred
side of
it. There are more than one loves in your life, dear listener.
But there's also the street cred side of it, right? Where it's like the difference between a large and a small publisher, there's many differences, but this thing that's the same about them is they both validate you in the eyes of the media. And they validate you in the eyes of the audience.
Yeah, the newspaper will do a story on you when you're traditionally published for no money, but they won't do a story on you if you...
Self-published.
Yeah, if you're self-published and you did really well.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how much money you make. But.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, if you made it about the money, then the story would be about how you value money over art. Like, there's so many skews. I've seen it happen. I've avoided it happening to myself as often as possible.
But even just the smallest traditional publisher credentials you in a way that is hard to explain to people in the eyes of, because it's stupid. Fundamentally, right. It doesn't make a lot of
here's
sense.
Here's another way.
But it is true.
Here's another intangible benefit of a traditional publishing, even with a small publisher. Those books will get into libraries. And that is not as important as the fact that that means they pass through the hands of our favorite champions of the book world, the librarians. If a librarian becomes aware of your book, they will grow that all-important thing for a writer, and that is readership. No, you won't make money every time that librarian lends out your book. We'll talk about PLR in a minute, public lending rights. There is a little bit of kickback. But for the most part, if a librarian sees that diamond, they will become the champion of that to readers. They know what their readers read, and they know what their readers want, and they will make those suggestions. I'm talking specifically now about teacher librarians who understand and spend a lot of time with the same students, with the same people over and over and over through the years, and they develop this profile on what people like and how they read it. And a book that starts to fall apart because it's being read, the librarian immediately orders another one, right? Maybe a couple. So that you can't do that at walking off the street and saying, hey, I published this story. Can you please give it to your students? There is no way that is happening to you.
Yeah, that credentialing or that endorsement, you know, the fact that you're in a bookstore, the fact that maybe you're in libraries, the fact that, you know, they can Google and find your publisher, you know, the fact that maybe you're getting press, you know, all that stuff. As you say, there's an intangible benefit or boost to your profile as an author, and then that can kind of unlock, you know, other things for you, like, you know, doing class visits.
We haven't even talked about the most tangible benefit that a new creator can access after being with any publisher, small, medium, large, and that's access to grant funding
in Canada.
Well, because we're in Canada.
Yeah.
The US doesn't have that.
Yeah.
But that's a very good point. Canada, you have you potential, at least, you know, you never know if you're going to get a grant.
Yeah.
People have some think you're just automatically guaranteed a grant. You may never get a grant in your whole life. Yeah. But
you're able to apply for them.
But you can apply for them. Yeah. And that's, you know, a sizable chunks of money potentially to really help move projects along and to make it so you don't have to worry
from
about
afar,
money as much.
Our Canadian granting body has the following mandate. I'm basically summing up Jonathan's summation of the granting system now.
Gosh.
So this is a quote of a quote of a quote. But the purpose of the Canadian granting system is to stabilize working artists, to provide them with a budgetable amount of money that allows them to, and this dovetails into my next point, to maybe work less at their regular job. And that regular job, I think, is a real important thing when you're starting out. Have one.
Yes.
Right? Keep
yes.
one. Maintain a regular job. And that is one of the reasons why it can be a double-edged sword. It can be a reason why people go with traditional publishing, is because they're already so darn busy. Could they possibly market, promote, travel, do all the stuff required to get your book seen? No, they're at work and they need that work. And so if you made in the only spare time you had a manuscript, and you in the only spare time you had managed to get it onto the desk of a mid to small range publisher that's interested in publishing it, already you've separated yourself from literally millions of people. And so you could just call that a win and go back to work happy that your book will show up in a store. Maybe it'll only be in the stores for a year, but that separates you from millions who just think about doing it.
Yeah, so that separation, if you want, you can build a whole business around the separation alone and never even have to be worrying about selling books. That's what business people do, right? Yeah. They'll publish a book as a loss leader for their business. Now, creatives often are not exactly doing that thing, but they can do that same sort of thing, you know,
theoretically. Yeah, and creative books are better than business books as far as fast forward 100 years.
But also, right. There's just that in terms of the intangible benefits. You do have the ability to build a whole business on your book without having to sell books. It sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And why don't you talk about some of the ways that can happen, Gregory? Because you've been involved in that longer than I have.
In like other things that come from having a book out?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that's part of what I was going to talk about here. So one of them is whimsical. If you have your book out from a traditional publisher, and they have assigned it an international book serial number. In Canada, one of the things that happens is it goes into an archive that is bomb-proof. It's supposed to survive the end of civilization, and all the books published in Canada go into these archives.
I owe them some books.
Right?
Yeah, I can't
think
about that.
It's kind of it's a silly thing to think about, but I like it, is the idea that there is a strong potential that hundreds of years from now, that one copy might be the only copy left of that book.
That your one copy will be used to heat someone's fire
somewhere,
and so, sometime.
Right, in that terrible world that's coming, right? Maybe somebody will find that and they'll be able to warm their cold bones while they roast what's left of their friend's meat for their last meal.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
used to say I write for the cockroaches.
Got all I need here.
You don't have a future. I could offer you that.
Shout out to John Toon, who started me down this road. We started going to libraries, schools early on in our writing journey. We worked on a little project called Six Gun Coyote together, which ended up inside of the Imagination Manifesto. And we started booking speaking gigs, paid speaking gigs, based on not our expertise, but our lack thereof. We didn't pitch these speaking tours as we know everything there is, but we don't really know anything. This is what we've done so far. And because so many people haven't started at all, we were surprised at how many people were interested in hearing just those first three or four steps that we have taken. And so one thing that can be really good for you if you are, now this is, I suppose, requires you to have already been an extrovert, right? But if you don't mind speaking in front of people, and sharing your wins and your losses, this can be a really valuable service that people are happy to pay for their seat to listen to it. And this is, again, a really important part is we brought our receipts. We would show Stuff we spent money on, that was a bad choice. Stuff we spent our time on, that was a bad choice. Drafts and rewrites that we did that were a waste of our time. And then we also showed our wins. So we tried really hard in those very early days not to say, come to our Making Comics workshops, we know everything. But come to our Making Comics workshops, we just did something right, and we want you to be able to do that right thing. Here's the 10 things we did wrong before that one right thing, and we shared that. And that became kind of a regular revenue stream for, well, to this day.
Yeah.
Where we just don't pretend to be experts. We pretend to have done this thing, and I'll tell you all the things I did wrong on the way to it.
So, of course, though, the corollary to that is, so I think that's a brilliant approach, but the other side of it is, of course, what people often do is become experts. You know, the fact that you've got a book out on a topic in nonfiction, of course, credentials you as an expert. Now, even in fiction, it's worth pointing out that you do have a level of expertise. You may or may not have done, for example, research on a topic that goes into the book. You've got the book itself. You can even spin your lack of expertise in, but the point is you've got like this speaking. You're a person that even is an expert on the mistakes that they made.
That's right. So here's the thing I'll say about being an expert on writing. And this is Rick Chafe said this so beautifully when we were working on Red Earth. I asked him, because he is a Governor General Award-winning playwright, and I basically looked at him and was like, okay, you're going to make this great, right? This is up to you. And he said to me, and I'm paraphrasing now, but he basically said to me, Gregory, you know, every story when you start is identical to the first time you ever wrote a story. You have no idea how it's going to work. You just do your best. And the only thing different between me and someone else is I finished a whole bunch of things before now. So I know I can finish. That's the only thing I know for sure, is that I can finish it. Whether it's any good or not, I have no idea until we try. And so if you have that as a as an internal rhetoric when you go to speak, even if your book was popular, that really wasn't up to you. So don't claim the secret to popularity. And if your book was a total flop, that's not really up to you either. So don't claim that you don't know anything. Just tell the story. So that's one
good... Even if you're just talking about, you know, the plants you planted in your garden and it has nothing to do with your book, the point is you have an intangible profile now because you published a book. You can have a whole speaking career if you want. Now, I don't know if you want it, but you can, you know. And so it could be a sideline. It could be a thing you do sometimes. I like to joke when I publish my book. People sometimes ask me, do you ever read your books after they've been published? And my joke about it is, I'll only read them if you pay me, you know. But sometimes that's what they do. They'll pay you to come and read your book.
So bookstores will sometimes pay an author to come and do a reading. Libraries will sometimes pay. Schools will sometimes pay. Classrooms will have a budget for paying. Comic conventions, literary conventions will sometimes have a speaking fee. There can be a fee just to arrive. There can be a fee to participate in a signing. There can be all of these things. But none of those things are available to you off the top if your book is not traditionally published.
Right.
So one of the ways I've navigated this part of my career is that I kind of do one for them, two or three for me. And that allows me to have books that are in bookstores, that are have books in libraries. It, someone Googles you and they find all of these, you know, nice reviews, or sometimes even bad reviews, but reviews, right? And so now you are a known entity. So now they can decide whether you come in. My work as a, so let's just go down that. So speaking fees you can get. You get press from it. You get reviews as a result of that. Your searchability, your SEO is way up. Your books are in libraries. If your books are in libraries, you get, in Canada, you get something called the public lending rights. So that very simply is they do a cross-section search of how often your books appear in libraries and then pay you a royalty based on that. The logic for that, dear listener in Canada, is that if your book is in a library a lot, it's not being purchased traditionally. And so in order to support well or often read writers, there should be some remuneration. So they do that. Other publishers know who you are. If other publishers know who you are, then agents know who you are. If other agents know who you are, then maybe they will suggest the right person to come to you. If agents, publishers, and the public know who you are, then when you're at these public events, other things happen. documentary crews show up, that happened to me, and then want to make a movie about the inside of your life. Filmmakers show up and say, hey, I have an idea for a movie. Do you want to work on it? Other comic people show up and say, can you do the cover of my comic? Book publishers show up at you. But you have to now, you have to exist in order for people to be able to approach you. And so all of these things are possible because a publisher paid you 10% royalty on a short run book.
That you're not making any money on.
That you're not, make, quote unquote, not making any money on.
Yeah.
And so all those things add up.
Let's quick, plus of course, as Lennon points out, you've got grant access potentially. Let's also just quickly dispel the obvious thing that people are going to say when they listen to this. They'll think to themselves, and they may even say to themselves, well, but what's the difference between, you know, traditional published? Isn't all that stuff also truly, shouldn't it be available to you if you self-publish a good book? What's the difference between traditionally publishing? A good book's a good book. Sure, it's true, but it doesn't matter. This is how the things are and how it works.
Yeah.
You can, it's almost impossible to get that stuff if you're only self-publishing. It does happen from time to time. Those are outliers. Traditionally published.
I couldn't name an Amazon POD top selling author. Like I don't know those names.
Sure you could.
No, a POD author. Not a traditionally published author. Someone who has POD.
Well, I know one because we know him personally.
Well, they exist.
Exactly. But of course they exist.
But
the
point
is,
they're outliers.
But I don't know who they are.
Chuck Tingle, you know who that is.
No.
Oh, brush your chops.
Your pop culture chops. You
got
to start tingling. Is that
even I know who Chuck Tingle is. But anyways,
dear listener,
you're 100%
Chuck
right.
Tingle
but
is,
people think.
Please make a comment.
But people, if you're listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, well, surely all that stuff would be accessible to you as a self-published author. No, it's not. It doesn't make any sense. I agree, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that you probably, if you self-published your book, you can't traditionally publish it now.
Very rarely. Common wisdom, maybe experience more than wisdom, because I don't think it's very wise, but the experience is if your book has been in the world, another publisher doesn't want to go back to the same well. And I can understand. Let's just.
And now we're not getting into the merits of whether why that makes sense or not. That's just how it is.
I'll give them some math merits. I'll stand for this brief moment on the side of the traditional publisher and say, if you're just looking at the math and they are already looking at pretty dismal returns all across the board, anyone that is going to take a bite out of those initial sales, they're nervous.
Yeah, those 20 or 30 copies you sell to your family.
Not even that. You know, if you kickstarted a book and you sold 1,000 copies of it already, well, maybe that's the only 1,000 copies that could ever have been sold. I disagree. Yeah. I happen to believe that you have proven there is a market for the idea. But I'm not the accountant managing hundreds of titles a month for a publisher trying to figure out where best to spend that money. So it's different.
Yeah, regardless of whether it makes sense or not, it's the case. You're correct. You know, if it's self-published, you know, you got some exceptions, but for the most part, you're not going to get it taken on by a traditional publisher.
If you're already famous, then you can break those rules.
Though, I think it's just a good caveat to say, like, when you're listening to this, people, and you're thinking, well, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, we agree that it doesn't make any sense, but this is the reality of the situation.
So what can you do if it doesn't make any sense? You can use your traditionally published book, and then that other book that you have been rejected 5 or 6 times, and in those rejections they said, maybe you should get some substantive edits. Do those. Maybe it needs another copy edit. Do that. Maybe you should send it to these 3 publishers. They might be interested. And you did, and they rejected it, but they were nice rejections. Oh, it's close, but we're full, or it's
you're
too close to something else. You're a
95%er.
That maybe is the book that's worth putting out yourself. So that the next time you're at a signing and someone says, what else you got? You can say this. And instead of getting 10% of that sale, you get 80% of that sale. Because you have to take your print cost out. Right?
And it didn't take you 3 years to publish.
2 days ago, I saw a vehicle that had hauled that tanker. You want to get out of here? You talk to me.
So when you think of the decision, like Lennon, are you going to go self-publishing or not for this new manuscript you've got? I think what people often overlook is you have to make that decision thinking about the book and what you think its potential is in different arenas, but you have to think about what is your business plan? Like, overall, what is your business? What is your business plan? What do you need that book to do in that business? And maybe there's exceptional cases where you're like, you know what? I just feel like this is the right book to try whatever with. But in the normal case, where you don't have like the potential for some runaway success in some arena or something, I think in the normal case, you really have to go back to like, well, what's your goals as a writer? What are you trying to have? How does this thing fit into your business? Does traditional publishing help get you the readership increase, or does it help? What's your plan?
As a brief aside, I would like to acknowledge to the dear listener that sometimes you just feel like writing and there's no larger plan. You don't have a big scope. You don't have any of the things. I want you to cling to that feeling, sit down and write whatever's on your mind. What we're discussing right now is the manuscript already exists.
Yeah, you should never think about these things in terms of writing. Like, yeah. It'll destroy you to start thinking about, is this, what's the potential marketability of this thing? I just think it's the worst possible thing a writer can do. That I always say in my classes, what happens is if you start thinking about this stuff too early, is you have a scene where the character is going to drink a Coke, and you're thinking, well, maybe you should drink a Pepsi instead because Pepsi has more market share than Coke. Or wait, maybe they should just drink a cola because then people who like Coke but don't like Pepsi will like this character more because they'll think, oh, the cola maybe could be a Coke.
I can't imagine ever having this inner conversation with myself.
People do this. People do this, Lennon. I swear to God, I talk to them. And I'm like, you got to stop thinking like this because what happens is you genericize everything.
Yeah, sure.
Here's where it happens. I'm giving you a ridiculous example, but I'll give you a concrete example.
Just have a cola.
No. I'll give you a concrete example where you know that it happens.
Cut
people
that sentence.
Set their book in New York or set the book in no city.
Yeah.
Right? You've seen that.
Yeah.
And you know that's the same thing, but it's just a less ridiculous example.
It's not in the sense that I've been told that books that are set in New York are easier to market traditionally than to put anywhere else.
It's not true, but you've been told that because everyone thinks that for this exact reason.
And what if I've been told that by agents?
They're
wrong.
I talked to these agents.
But they're the ones who decide.
They don't decide. The readers decide, though, Leonard.
Dear listener.
They think this, but the readers decide. It's starting to get sidetracked with
this. I sit on the side of this conversation that is taking us afield of our topic.
Again,
I would suggest that this is another reason why it's good to seek traditional publishing advice, because you will quickly see that the edifice built up by publishers is simply that. It's a false front. And as soon as you're inside it, you realize how thinly constructed that edifice is.
This is a pro-publisher episode, isn't it?
But it's true.
But this is important because once you see that that edifice is so thin, once you're on the inside of it, you can ask people for help because everyone is trying to hold up this huge edifice and their arms are tired. And you can go over to them and you can say, hey, this is kind of a little bit silly, right? And they'll be like, oh yeah, it's really silly. Do you think you could help me find a better person to help me refine my manuscript? Oh, you're actually interested in the craft? Actually, yeah, I would love to help you with that. I don't need to pretend that all authors are famous and special. I would love to just work on how important it is to write books for the human condition. Yes, yeah. let's talk about that.
Hate it too. They're all dealing with their marketing departments. They think they're an idiot. They're dealing with idiots. They don't like these bean counters. They don't like any of it. And they're passing things along to you that they don't even believe. And you can just push back and they won't even care. Like, that's the sort of weirdness of it. They'll say things. Like, if you ask them a question, they'll answer the question how best they think they should. But they don't even believe their own answer half the time.
Yeah.
And so, but you don't know what's real and what's fake until you're into it, as you say. I think you're 100% right about this. You can't think about the marketability too early. It's only worth worrying about when the book's done. And then you have to kind of get into that game a little bit and learn what's real and what's fake.
Mm-hmm. So then one of the intangibles of publishing traditionally is learning what's real and what's fake. about the book business.
Right.
And asking yourself, and here's, I'll say this too. I know many authors that could not care less about these tiny granular elements, and that is why they want to be traditionally published. They have a good thing going with their publisher, which is they have a what's called a first right of refusal, meaning that in a contract, often if you publish your book traditionally, that publisher gets to look at your next manuscript and either take it or pass on it, but you must send it to them first. I know dozens of authors personally that I've met on the convention circuit that this is their favorite thing about being traditionally published. They don't have to wonder where they're sending it anymore. That's what they want out of their life. They want to do their regular job, which they like enough to do every day. And in their free time, spare time, them time, they want to write what's on their mind to write. And they know when it's done, they're going to send it off to that traditional publisher. And 80% of the time, that publisher is going to take their next book.
And it gets put in front of their audience.
It
and
gets
the publisher
put in front.
Has built that readership
That's
up.
Right.
And again, there's no money involved here anymore.
That's right. But there's
That's
also...
That's not what they are interested in.
Let's take money out of the equation now. There is just a sense of, I have something to say, and I know it will be heard, and I don't need it to be heard by millions. I just need to get it out, and somebody validates me by saying it's worth saying, and they validate me by printing a few thousand copies of it and putting in bookstores, and a few thousand copies of it get bought by readers who then further validate my idea by having a discourse around it, showing up at my events, and then I can write the next one based on that feedback. And now, dear listener, you're just a happy, you're happier.
But if that's what you want to do,
you're not richer, but you're happier.
But if that's what you want to do, the question you get into was, well, how am I making money here? Because you're not making it from that.
Yeah.
So you could be doing it from these intangible things. You could have this side career related to what you're doing, where you're speaking or doing this, that, the other thing. I don't, you know, whatever it is. You could have, you could even work for hire or freelancing, you know, on the side because you've got this resume of books you published or whatever. You could just have a different career entirely. You could be, you know, an engineer, and then you write these fantasy novels. That's sort of one supporting the other, right? Like, whatever it is you're doing, I think that has to factor into the decision, you know, because there's no point self-publishing if you don't want to be a publisher, right? Like, if you don't need the money and from the book sales, and you don't need want the hassle of being a publisher, why are you self-publishing?
Yeah.
I see people all the time, they'll default to self-publishing because they think it's somehow easier.
The answer to that, unfortunately, is because you're not publishable. The
yes.
reason that you self-publish but without wanting to make money or without wanting to be a publisher is because a publisher won't do it. But you
yeah.
still want to make
and
it,
so
which is
fine.
So if you're
going into it with eyes wide open, fine.
And desktop publishing is in a state now where a person who has written 50,000 words, has not read it over twice, is convinced that their own genius is able to put that book up on POD on Amazon, have AI generate a cover for them. AI probably generated part of the book or the blurb on the back also, and they enter the marketplace. And this is the stigma that is going to... There was a brief shining moment where the stigma of being self-published in regular publishing was starting to
was gone.
Erode. It was sort of okay. And now it's with all of these disingenuous tools that allow you to get to market, be first to market, be quick to market, generate content without any conscience. You're going to have traditional publishing pushing back even harder on what you're doing. So one of the ways in which we navigate that here at the studio is we go to the places where people accept that the work speaks for itself. And so comics are, they have a certain superpower in that if you open up a comic book, you at a glance, you know where it sits in how professional it is. You can just see it in the considerations of the artwork, the lettering, and the design. Even if you know nothing about artwork, lettering, and design, you know one that was quickly mass-produced with little thought and one that had care and artistry involved. You can tell the difference at a glance. And so when we're at conventions and we're in these environments, a more discerning public is able to say, oh, well, yeah, you printed this yourself, but it's obviously because right now science fiction isn't selling and you wanted to put your science fiction out, so you did this book yourself.
Well, there's a myriad of reasons why you would self-publish.
Yeah, I'm just making up one, right, in the moment.
I'm gravely disappointed. Again, you have made me unleash my dogs of war.
Let's trace back to that question. Lennon's got a book. He's finished. He's not sure.
There's no advance.
He's going to publish it or not.
$500 advance.
Yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, he doesn't know whether she should try to take it out traditionally or self-publish it. He's trying to make that decision. So could you talk just, Lennon, like, what are the factors that go into your personal decision? Like, not what, you know, a person should think about.
Yeah, I spoke about that. They are, can a publisher build me an audience that I can't do on my own?
So that's what you're after at this point for you, is you want to grow the audience more than you want, say, money or other things.
Yeah, because readers, I mean, you know, I had a student once say to me, and this is like early on in my writing career, actually, Jesse Hamill, who we know well, he has designed the sound effects for Super Pulp Science. So shout out to Jesse Hamill. This introduction for Super Bowl Science, designed by him, an old student of mine, a very wise beyond his years gentleman, who when I was a much younger man, he said to me, I thought the purpose of writing was to be read. Who cares if anyone pays you for it? Isn't the maximum number of readers a sign of whether a book has done well, not how much you got paid to do it? And he is very conversant in how the internet works. And so at that time, the idea of how an idea could spread, this was before we had the word for it, which we now call memes, right? How an idea could spread so rapidly was a indication of whether the idea was worth spreading, is that it would spread, right? And so I've thought about that often, that if you're trying to build readership, you should take money out of the equation at first.
I agree.
Is what I'm trying to get at, though. If you want simply the most readers, there's an argument to be made that you should not traditionally publish the book, but instead self-publish it and give it away for free.
No, I don't agree with that, because
why don't you? That's why I want
to get at. Because you do not have the infrastructure to give it away for free. No one is going to read it. You don't, because you don't have the newsletter. You don't have the, are you going to go on the street and
hand
it out?
Let me put it to you another way.
This is the thing, though, that people get caught up in, because they're thinking about the early days of the
internet. Those guys who hand out the Watchtower to you, do you take it? That's free.
That's a great way to put it. But in the early days of the internet, yes, you could do that. Cory Doctorow did very well doing this kind of thing. And then he made money as a
In the early days of the internet. But these are...
But times have changed, and people keep looking at those old things.
The late days of the internet.
The late days. Yeah. But I think that's a good thing to bring up. Like, we're kind of looped back in some ways, this world where the infrastructure is more available to people, and therefore it's harder to get readers to pay attention to anything.
To get traction, yeah.
And there is still the advantage, I would argue, that a traditional publisher has in that arena.
Yeah. Now, whether that cachet is falsely maintained by the publishing syndicate is a completely other conversation. Mm. But the reality is that being with a traditional publisher gives you a credibility that self-publishing will not give you. And there is such a value to that is disconnected from money, that it's worth doing and may in fact lead to money. So, you know, when I look at a book that I'm hoping to get traditionally published, by getting an agreement with a traditional publisher, you now strengthen your ability to seek funding from grants to get money to make that book.
Again, let's imagine that people are not in Canada. Here's another intangible about that publisher. And here's a little bit of advice. If you're going to go with a mid-range to small publisher anyway, because that's who's interested, just do it in your own city. Find the one in your own city. And here's a good reason why. Then you can start going to their book launches. You can start being part of the community. You can be embraced by that community. You can learn so much by the community of writers that is right in your own city. If you're not going to be published by HarperCollins, right, and you're going to be published by a mid, it's much more advantageous to you that mid is in your own city and not in another city, so that you can see the people they're working with, you can understand the supply chain, you can meet the designer yourself, you can get on the phone with them, go for coffee, all of the stuff that makes publishing hard is easier if that small publisher is in your own city.
I'd like to agree with that.
But of course you won't.
But he won't.
I do agree with it, but I'll tell you why I don't do it.
I know.
So I'm not saying you're wrong. I agree with what you're saying, but let me just give you the other side of why I don't do that. Mm. So I only publish with Toronto publishers. So that I don't
That's
need
the
to
most Jonathan Ball thing. You've
no, it's true though. Except for heavy metal, I only publish the Toronto publishers, or let's call it, you know, outside of heavy metal. And the reason is because I don't want to live in Toronto.
Yeah, sure.
But all of them are in Toronto, and they get to go around Toronto, which is the center of, you know, the publishing industry in Canada. I have a much larger profile than I should have in this country because of this.
In Winnipeg, we have a saying: it's better to go to Toronto than to go to a place you don't want to.
Well, I would not Those advise are the same going to Toronto. But because I don't want to live in Toronto, but I want a national profile, I've chosen to work with Toronto publishers. Mm. Now, at this point, I would start maybe publishing locally. Although I like my Toronto publishers, I'll probably still offer
them. There's an idea, though, that somehow that an expert is only from like someone 1,000 kilometers away. And I think we ought to get over that notion, right? I see
you're
what you're
right,
saying.
But
you're right.
You understand that, what I'm saying, though.
Yeah. In the time scale that you and I are talking about where our careers were, that was a great move to get your books out from a Toronto publisher. But now I think that
here the scene is much bigger than it used to be.
Than it used to be. And so, and I bet, dear listener, in the city or township that you are in, there's somebody who would take a chance on you and would like to develop that relationship. And the downside is that if it goes badly for you and you hate it, then of course you're poisoning your own well a bit.
Well, but also to jump back to your earlier point of, like, you know, people send things out and then they should start working on another thing right away. What I find sometimes happens with people is they'll start overthinking this stuff and they'll be like trying to figure out the perfect exact thing that they should do as if they could control it all anyway. Mm-hmm. But what I often say to people is, like, look, if it all goes wrong, you could always just write another book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And don't forget that it doesn't all ride on this one decision you're making. If you do traditional publishing and it doesn't work out for you, then try another one with the next book.
So, dear listener, if you are considering if your idea, your graphic novel, your book, your project is ready for a larger audience, I think it's a good idea for you to take a look at how it fits into the present day landscape of published work. Go into a bookstore, look around, find one that you think is close. Then look at that publishing information. Take a picture of it on your phone if you're strapped for cash, whatever. Then look up that publisher website. Then look at their comparable titles. Then ask yourself, can I sum up my book as succinctly as they have summed up these books? And do I want to read those books even though I've had to leave out all these important parts about their book? That's a big hurdle for people who are first looking at whether or not their book is ready. They don't know how to sum it up. Practice that summation. That's an intangible. You've already started learning how to be a better writer in being able to boil down your book. Then write that cover letter. A really important skill to figure out. And it'll take you a lot of practice to get it right, to hit that right tone of brevity and wit all together with what your book is really about. And you'll practice that a whole bunch, but that's good practice for writing. Then once you have sent it out and you start waiting, fill that waiting time with more writing time. And then maybe that traditional publisher will get back to you and maybe they won't. But that's for another episode of Super Pulp Science, where we have talked about how a genre gets made. We have had some brief arguments with Dr. Jonathan Ball, some insightful comments by Lyndon Rodchenko, and some general brevity from GMB Kamichuk. That is me, and I'm encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.